You're listening to the Market Leaders Podcast, brought to you by Pipeline Plus. Professional service firms use Pipeline Plus to capture more business from their most important clients, prospects, and referral sources. Pipeline Plus delivers the simplest interface in the marketplace and in-app suggestions on exactly which actions to take to close the next deal. It's used as a standalone app, in conjunction with business development coaching, or as a CRM companion for more effective sales pipeline management. To learn more or schedule a demo, visit pipelineplus.com. Hello and welcome back to the Market Leaders Podcast. I'm David Ackert, and today our guests are Robin Davidson, who's the head of business development and communications at Boies Schiller, and Matt Plavnik, the director of client development at Wheeler Trigg O'Donnell. Matt, Robin, great to have you on the show today.
Thanks for having us, David.
Thank you, David.
All right. We have a really interesting topic lined up today. We're going to talk about this concept of constructive pushback, which is hyper relevant in the context of legal business development. Because at a law firm, you have the lawyers, they are the partner level, they own the firm, they are the shareholders. So they're essentially the bosses. It's their firm. And yet here we are as professionals advising them on business development, which is not necessarily an arena where they have expertise. And so it's important to, especially in a law firm where business development doesn't mean you are out there selling on behalf of the firm necessarily, but that you're playing more of a business development support role or maybe something of a hybrid. And so a lot of what that role entails is advising the lawyers on how they can be the best business developers possible. So, of course, this requires more of an advisory role, not just a service role or an administrative role. So let's talk a little bit about why constructive pushback can be especially challenging in a law firm environment, given the personalities involved, given these hierarchical dynamics that I just alluded to. Robin, let's start with you. What's your perspective?
Sure. You framed this well, I think, all the various nuances that go into the dynamics. There's always going to be a little push-pull on this topic, right? Because I think that no matter what experience and advice I bring to the table when I'm having conversations with attorneys, at the end of the day, it's their personal relationships. So, you know, when you can get to a place where it is a conversation that you're having and we, the legal marketers and business development professionals are bringing our experiences, our examples of best practices, are examples of what's worked well and what hasn't, and you're adding that to what the attorney is telling you about the nature of this client and that relationship, you know, that's when it's, I think of that as push-pull more than push-back, right? Where the real magic happens is when everyone's bringing that knowledge to the table together for a conversation. One of the things that I think potentially makes it difficult in law firms, when you think about lawyers, you know, and people like to talk about law firms and lawyers as being risk averse. I don't necessarily think that's always accurate, certainly not at all firms. But I do think lawyers, fundamentally, their jobs are to figure out the right answer. So I think very good lawyers are accustomed to being right often. And so, you know, they're not always good at hearing pushback.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Matt, your thoughts?
Well, Robin hit right on something I was thinking about, which is that I often have to train my teams to remember that they're not doing anything wrong. It's that lawyers come in assuming they're right. They've been trained to think that they're right. That's not always the case. Not every lawyer sees it as that black and white, but there's sort of a default position by training of let's identify the best solution. And let's push it out there. And by the time they contact the service providers, they already think they know what the answers are. And so one of the things that I'm constantly doing with my team is I'm reminding them to ask questions and learn more. And not what does the lawyer think we should do? What is the lawyer trying to get? Why is that important? And what tools do we have as the business development and marketing professionals? And what experiences do we bring that the lawyers may not bring, right? And one thing I want to highlight real quickly too is that Robin and I both work in litigation. And so you've got another level of assertiveness, I think, from litigators and trial lawyers when they come to the business development and marketing teams, and a way of I remind folks, this is very much in the pushback framing, David. I remind folks that, you know, the lawyers are sort of trained to spot the weaknesses in arguments. So there's this other side of it. We've been talking about when they come to us and we have to push back, but there's this other side, which is that business development professionals and marketing professionals are constantly bringing ideas to the lawyers, and lawyers are poking holes in them. And what I remind my team is that's the conversation, right? That's not the lawyer telling you you've got a bad idea. That's the lawyer probing and testing to see if they can make it better, right? And have we considered all of this? And so one of the things for professionals on our side is to be prepared for that and use that to help move the conversation forward, not to become discouraged and think, oh, my idea is never going to fly. They don't like it. They don't think I'm smart, you know, to race to the bottom of that conclusion.
I really appreciate the way you're framing that, Matt. I think that a less experienced business development professional or legal marketer might have that knee-jerk reaction to a lawyer's a propensity to argue a point, or the propensity to walk in the room with a strong opinion that appears as though it was fully thought through, fully informed, and has the breadth of experience backing it up. When in fact, that's a little bit more, especially in arenas like business development or leadership or some of these soft skills where the lawyers may not have gotten the same level of training as they did in the law, that is more of a posture, or that is more of just a style of communication that permeates everything that they do and everything that they are. And so as legal marketers, as business developers, we have to recognize that that's just the way that a thought will be presented. That doesn't necessarily mean that this is the end of the conversation. In fact, as you point out, the opposite. That's the beginning of the conversation. Every interaction is an invitation to have a healthy debate so that on the other end of that debate, we have a better version or a more compelling way forward than we did initially. I will say, though, that sometimes there are lawyers who lack the humility to be able to receive that pushback in a healthy way such that we arrive at that destination, right? And again, some of that is on our shoulders to bring the gravitas to the table to push through that piece. Because if the pushback is not positioned just right, it might seem offensive, or it might get dismissed, or we might find that that wasn't a conversation at all. It was really just a directive or a mandate. You know, I want to sponsor such and such an event, and that's the end of that. And unless you know exactly how to weave through that maze, you'll get lost in it.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And one of the best things you can do in that moment, rather than coming to loggerheads with that lawyer, or acceding entirely, you step back and remind yourself that the firm is your client first and foremost. The firm is the business development professional's client before the individual lawyer is, no matter how much influence that lawyer has. That can be very fraught, but it can also be very reaffirming for the BD or marketing professional who is trying to thread the needle, you know, weave their way through that dynamic, David, as you point out, because there's a position of strength to fall back on there when you remember, I've got to figure out how to do what's best for the firm here, not what's best for this individual lawyer.
And Matt, something that I think, you know, feeds in perfectly to what you're saying, when you view the situation through that lens, I have to think about the firm overall. You're always going to, in my experience, find the other relevant parties within the firm who understand your perspective because they're also thinking about it from a firm level, have another conversation with another person over here, and then you're starting to talk about it, you know, from different angles, whatever the it is, and you can have a conversation that's, you know, get some allies perhaps to help you move forward with a solution that's best for the firm.
Yeah, let me draw a parallel for you both that I think is really instructive. When I hire a graphic designer and they give me back exactly what I asked for, then I am disappointed. The reason I hire a graphic designer or a graphic design agency is to give me back what I'm asking for, only better, to do the things that they can do that I cannot do on my own, right? And so marketing and BD inside a law firm can and should function in the same way. When service professionals inside a firm believe that they're providing excellent service if they give the lawyer back exactly what the lawyer asks for, they're missing the opportunity to do what they uniquely know how to do, which is create a stronger appetite for what we are selling, right? And so we should not be cowed into the posture by an attorney who comes in and presents as if they know exactly what they want, and they won't be happy until we give them exactly what they want. It's ours should be the role of how can I give him or her what she wants, better. Only yeah. better.
I've never met an attorney who, no matter how great they thought their idea was, turned out to be disappointed when we gave them something even better. That's a great point.
Let me ask you this. You both have several people on your teams, and I'm sure you have encountered new hires who, it turns out, lacked that gravitas, that ability to navigate this kind of conversation, especially if they're newer to our industry or if they're just more junior professionals. For most people, the instinct is, if I say yes to my bosses, I will keep my job. If I say no to my bosses, sooner or later, I will lose my job. And some of that is how you say yes and how you say no. So now it starts to get very nuanced and complicated. But I'm curious, how do you train or develop that right level of gravitas so that these conversations can be navigated effectively? And by the way, it's not just navigated effectively broadly. You've got to navigate it this way with Laura, and you got to navigate it that way with James, and you've got to completely avoid the conversation with Mark. But Joey over there is happy to have the conversation all day long. In fact, you've got to bring it to Joey fully baked, and then Joey will just say yes. Like, you've got to learn all of these different proclivities. And of course, you had better be able to bring the right level of grit and gravitas for those lawyers who require it. How do you train that?
Some of it can only be done over time and with experience, right? And because it is a relationship that you develop over time. And what you can't do is just turn someone loose on day one and expect it to go well, right? You, as the supervisor, have to get to know their work product, their communication style. You have to sort of be paying attention to all these pieces and how they fit together. And maybe, you know, James, from your example, I can tell already that this new hire that I'm dealing with has a presentation style that James is going to be dismissive of. So let's not throw this person in with James right away, right? And you have to sort of think about the big picture in that way. Make your moves in a way that sets a new hire up for success, that continues to help them develop their skills and learn from each experience. You also, you know, run the risk if you box them into one area, you know, this new hire is going to be great with Jane. We're going to stick her in there with Jane. They're not going to develop enough, right? You want to bring them along. So you make those decisions along the way. And maybe this time it's that I'm going to bring you into the room with me and James, and I'll be the one with gravitas, but you can watch it in action. And then, you know, you'll see some of the things I said to him. Maybe the setup is as simple as me sending an email to someone telling them that you're the one who's going to handle it. And by the way, you did this exact thing for someone else last week and it went really great. So I'm sort of priming them that you have the skills and the abilities to deliver for them. You know, there's a thousand little ways that you can manage your team in a way that sets them up for success. But I think the most important things are to make sure they have the support they need from day one, to continue to learn and develop and grow.
Robin, I just want to highlight a few of the things you said, because there was gold in there, and then we'll switch over to you, Matt, for your perspective. But it sounds like the first thing that, as a manager, you do is you encourage new hires to just hang back and learn, observe. Don't step in anything yet. Just look to see what the landscape is. And then the step two here is model the right approach for them so they can see it in action, because, of course, you know this arena and you know how to navigate it. And if you can show them how you do it, they'll come up with their version of that. And then lastly, you talked about a feedback loop. So whenever there's a success, call it out, tell them what they did right, encourage them to do more of that so that they can lean into that and hopefully find their way through this landscape a little more efficiently. Matt, let's hear your perspective.
I think it's such a wonderful question, David, and I want to reach back even farther than you set it up, because I think if I heard...
This is my podcast. This is my podcast. You can't do that. You're going to show me up.
No. This is a yes and moment, David, because one of the things I've learned the hard way is that it isn't always enough to train and develop on the skills you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm actually hiring for those skills. I'm interviewing. And I'm evaluating, even at the most junior levels, I'm evaluating how do I think this individual is going to present in the room with the lawyer under whatever the circumstance, right?
Okay. I want to hear how you interview for that. How do you interview for gravitas? Because this is something that I think a lot of people really struggle with. They hire someone, and then 6 months later, they're like, boy, they looked good on paper and they had a good first date, but boy, this thing isn't working out.
Oh, my gosh. And I have lived through that excruciating torment. And those words are not too strong. I have made hires out of desperation. I have hired based on what the paper looked like. I've hired on an excellent first interview where I really thought somebody was set up. They were telling me all the right things.
Yeah.
But what I've learned is none of that is enough. So one thing that I've learned from the lawyers at my firm and our HR and recruiting professionals is the value of behavior-based interview questions, right? Where I am not focused on the skills, right? I'm screening for skills at far earlier stages. But with behavior-based interviewing, I'm getting scenarios from candidates. I'm asking, tell me about a time, one of my favorite interview questions. Tell me about a time when you worked with a lawyer or a subject and you spent your 45 minutes with them, you got your time, you've even maybe asked a couple of follow-up questions, and then as you're doing your writing, you realize you just don't understand the key issue and you don't know what to do with it. Tell me how you managed, how'd you work through that situation, right? This is for an imaginary writer role, right? And having them describe a time where they got to it and they realized, man, and this is a common thing for business development and marketing professionals. It's like even the lawyer down the hall doesn't understand the nuances of the litigation that their neighbor is working on. It's easy to think that, oh, they're lawyers. They've got special training. They all understand this. That's not true. Plenty of lawyers in the firm don't understand what their peers are working on in the nuance in any given moment. And so especially, David, you talked about, you know, somebody at a more junior level, a proposal writer at a more junior level comes in and has a huge task to deliver information in an RFP format or a tailored pitch format. And so, at that interview level, what I'm asking for is, have you weathered these experiences? How did you go about it? What did you say when you realized you still didn't have it? What's your bedside manner when you call that lawyer up or stop by their office and say, look, I know you explained it to me and I'm embarrassed to say, I need you to explain it to me again, right? Or can I send you my draft and acknowledge that my draft isn't there yet, but I need that reader understanding how they approach that even before they get in the door. Here's another thing I recently started doing with my hires. Before, and this is because of what you said, David, they look great on paper. They sounded great on the first date, right? I've been through that. I've set them up and set them out there, and I've watched all of us flame out spectacularly, and everybody is disappointed in that instance, right? Everybody suffers. So I have started asking my candidates to do their own interviews with a couple of lawyers. Okay, assume you get the job, right? Here's your second interview. Assume we've hired you, and now your first assignment is to go meet Joel, go meet Marissa, and interview them to figure out how what they do and how are you going to support their practices, right? And I'm going to be a fly on the wall. So that's the second round interview. And they're actually in a live environment with our lawyers, and I get to watch them interact before we have to set them out there. That has been really important. And in fact, I have not extended an offer to a candidate who I thought was very well qualified, because watching them in that interview made clear to me they didn't have the skills to work with our lawyers. And I've made a hire that is working out very, very well after that. And she, you know, hit the ground running and has a head start with those lawyers, because she wowed them in that, you know, second interview with my team, first interview with those lawyers. And we got to see her in action. And I'm going to do that. I am going to do that for every position going forward. I'm going to figure out the right way to do it. But that's a key part, because now we're testing the presumed gravitas or grit, the personability, the nimbleness, you know, the how do you redirect all of that.
That's great, Matt. I really appreciate you sharing that technique. And I mean, we've seen this even in our own hires. You know, the person who does the preliminary hire comes in and says, oh, I found this great candidate. They gave me a great interview. They really seem qualified. And then they interview with me. And, you know, whether it's just our chemistry or the fact that now they're talking to the CEO and the stakes are higher, they kind of fall apart. So you've got to see them in different contexts. And of course, putting them in front of the lawyers makes a lot of sense. Robin, your thoughts here.
For me, when I think about hiring, especially at larger firms, the larger your teams, it takes all kinds. But I also, purely from like a DEI perspective, I personally start getting a little nervous when we drill too much into like behavioral and personality things because of neurodiverse people who can be excellent contributors to your team. I find it interesting, but I would have to think more about it.
No, that's a really good point. You know, not everyone's role will require this kind of ability to navigate a conversation in a particular way. And some people will find their way per the earlier kind of process that we talked about. Hang back and learn was the first note, right? So some people only after they've had the benefit of that will be able to find their way effectively through that conversation. So you're right. Sometimes you set someone up unfairly to perform before they've had the opportunity to learn the lay of the land. And of course, you point out diversity, neurodiversity, all of those factors also have to be taken into consideration. So it's a multifaceted process. I want to pivot here real quick into a question. So we know from Matt's example, and Robin, you touched on this too, that you say no in order to get to the better version of something in the context of a culture where debate is valued as a useful mechanism for process improvement. But there are other benefits to saying no. And one of the things that you said, Robin, when we were preparing for this meeting was you can't get to the right yes or something like that. I want to come back to that idea because I thought it was so clever and you can characterize it better than I can. So
sure. I think, you know, when we were talking, what I said in that moment was like sometimes saying no creates space for yes.
That's what it was. Yeah.
And, you know, I know from working closely with Matt on this LMA pre-con, he likes to say, and I agree with him 100%, you know, time is one of our most limited resources in these roles. So it would be great if we lived in a world where we could all say yes to everyone's idea and think everyone would get their shot and, you know, it would, you know, I see Matt disagreeing. I understand it would not be great.
But like, you misread my expression.
Okay. Okay. But, you know, like, we don't have time to get to everything. We have to prioritize. You know, if someone's sending you down the wrong path, you have to be able to say no so that you can get to the right stuff. You know, I just so happened to be having a conversation with one of my managing partners yesterday. We were talking about a lateral who had joined the firm recently, and our team has been really active in supporting this person and getting their like business development going. I was talking about the volume of it, and then I stopped and I said to him, I was like, but I just want it to be clear. These are all really good things that we're doing with this person, right? His response back, and it's really wonderful when you have these people in leadership, was, yeah, of course, you guys have a small team. We want you spending your time on the right things. And, you know, that's sometimes you have to say no in order to be able to spend your time on the things that are going to pay off better for the firm, your ultimate client, as Matt said earlier.
Matt, you want to speak to this? For those who can't see you right now, you have an expression where the wheels are turning. You're thinking about things. Let's hear some of those thoughts.
Yeah, this is my resting face, right? Robin thought I was disagreeing a minute ago. I really think this is an area of opportunity for the marketing and business development professionals to demonstrate their value. If we are saying yes to everything, we really risk diluting the service we provide, okay? And it's important to pause and think about, how does this help the lawyer who's in front of me? How does this help that lawyer's immediate peers, the practice group or teammates or however you're organized? How does it help the firm? Does it align with what I know the firm's strategic priorities are? Does it align with the marketing and business development priorities we've identified with the practice group or even with the individual? What prior materials do we have in place? And this is a little bit pie in the sky, but, you know, in theory, the lawyer you're working with has a marketing or a BD plan for the year. And how does it, and this is, Robin mentioned the pre-con a minute ago in time. I mean, this is another one of our topics. Two of our topics at the LMA pre-con are, the art of saying no to lawyers and still making them happy, and, balancing tactics versus strategy, right? And so I understand the lawyer wants this. This is the bright, shiny object. This may satisfy a short-term need, but is it the best play big picture? And being the one to step back, listen, lawyers often come to us when they are either excited for an opportunity or worried, right? And both of those create a very urgent sense. And if the marketing professional can be the one to slow down and, you know, affirm what they're hearing, but not play into that urgency themselves, they have the opportunity to really exercise some wider vision. And, here's a great example. I had the great good fortune, my firm, I can't say enough, they supported me in working with an executive coach, for 6 months, year before last. And she's this remarkable, you know, coaches do a lot of wonderful things. One of the things is they listen to you. And they let you justify everything and explain your rationale. And then they ask you, and this was my coach's gift, they ask you that one question that forces you to reevaluate your assumptions and ask, wait, why am I doing this? And here's the role that we can play with the lawyer. What happens is, I think when we're trying to say yes, we're just going in a straight line, right? From point A to point B, and that's how we measure success. The marketing and BD professional has this opportunity to look at, you know, maybe there's a plane that we simply want to cross. It doesn't have to be a point, but a plane. I picture a triangle, right? And if where we're sitting is the point of the triangle, do we need to get to the other point to be successful, or is it that anywhere along the other plane would be successful? And as a manager, for instance, this is the biggest trap I fall into, is I think, oh, I got to get this team member over to this point. That's not true. I got to help this team member figure out how to get anywhere across that line. That's success. Same thing with the lawyer, right? So if we can see ourselves anywhere across that line, that's when the value really starts to take off. And that's how we're getting the lawyers to really view this as a spectrum or a continuum, not a destination. And that opens up these endless possibilities that maybe none of us have thought of yet, but we're all going to like when we get there.
Yeah, that's really, really well said. Very astute. You both have alluded to your LMA pre-con session. Do you want to share a couple of sort of key tidbits that you plan to focus on in terms of advice for folks who are struggling with this idea of saying no or saying no in a constructive way?
Do you want to go first, Matt?
Sure. One thing I always like to encourage folks to do is ask the question that nobody else in the room has thought of, right? If you want to help, I think that there's this constant pressure on BD and marketing teams, and especially we've talked about a little bit on this interview. We've talked about folks who may be more junior in their careers and more uncertain of how to say no. And so ask the question that the lawyer hasn't thought of and begin to develop in that way. I think that there's a richness there. And what's wonderful about it is that as you begin to ask questions and explore this together, you may get more of the information you need to get to yes, or to get to a better yes. You know, the one we talked about that earlier. If we say yes to this, we miss out on the better yes, right? So maybe we say no in order to get to the better yes. Asking questions can help us get the information we need to help get there with the lawyer. Asking the questions the lawyer hasn't thought of automatically raises your value as a service provider, right? And part of the art of saying no is making sure that that lawyer understands that you still want to deliver for them, right? And so it's, how can we deliver something better? And that trust is really essential. And asking questions can help you build that trust instead of going back to a lawyer, remember, who's been trained to be right, or heaven forbid, going back to a trial lawyer or litigator and trying to match skills there in poking holes in something. You can elegantly sidestep all of that if you can ask questions that lead them through that instead of going one-on-one with them.
Yeah, helping them arrive at it by asking the right questions. So instead of ever saying no, you might consider saying, have you considered this possibility? Or,
I've been known to say, hey, listen, every now and again, you have to say no. It's like, oh my gosh, do you want them to beat the crap out of you when this makes it into the pit? Do you understand that the moment this hits Law 360, this is actually how it's going to read? And you can have that moment, and then they can say, oh my gosh, I didn't think of it that way. Right.
Right. Like, right.
Sometimes you have to say no, but yeah, you're right. You're helping them find the path.
Yeah. Right. Yes. And is often more palatable than yes, but.
Yeah, that's right. But even yes, and, you know, yes, and has its place, but sometimes the answer is no, and we need to pivot, right? We can't include the initial concept. We've got to really go back to the drawing board. So this is where these questions that are open-ended and sort of lead an exploration can be so valuable. Even if the business development professional already has the destination in mind, if it's truly an iterative process, as Matt pointed out, you'll land on that plane. You won't land at a point. And so there's ultimately a collaborative conversation to be had.
Yeah, and that's also where some of the creativity comes into play, I think, because, you know, in my experience at least, it's very rare that the answer is just a flat no. Like, you have to bring some solution, right? And that's where you get creative, and that's where you, you know, okay, this is what you asked for, and here's a laundry list of reasons why we can't do that, but here is a solution that might achieve the same thing for you. It fits in with the rest of the firm's goals. It's something that's easily replicated. So, like, you and I are spending this time putting it together now, but then, like, you can go do this with all your clients, and you're sort of, you're delivering a solution. And that, like, that's the key to being successful at telling someone no, because we are the service providers in these jobs, right? I can't just say no to you. I have to say no, but here's the solution you actually need.
Right.
Robin, I'm embarrassed that it's taken us 40 minutes to get to that really important point. And thank you for bringing it out. It is so important to be thinking about how am I going to deliver something, right? And the questions you ask are part of getting there, but the mindset should be, and this is where I see service teams inside firms fall into traps that are totally avoidable, right? The inexperienced or the less enthusiastic or the less creative or the less passionate service providers go to no without thinking beyond that moment. And that's where everybody comes away feeling underserved and raw. Robin is coming to these scenarios thinking, okay, I know that no is not the end of this. I've got to deliver something. So I'm going to come in. I am not going to let this idea get out of the gates, right? That would be a disservice, but it never stops there. And one of the things, this goes back, David, to your question a little bit about training and development. There are two really important things that I think our teams need to know. And they need to hear it from us as leaders. They need to hear the why behind the what, right? We don't have to kick a dead horse, but they need to understand what it means and why it's important to the firm or the individual. David, you were talking about you can do it one way with Jackie, but you have to do it a different way with Mark, and you can't talk about it at all with Ted, right? And why? What are the personalities? So spending that time in there. The other thing our teams, I think, really need to understand is that at the end of the day, I think we're all here for the skills we bring, right? You're a proposal writer, you're a graphic designer, you're a social media guru, right? But we're all service providers. And what our lawyers want is they want to be provided with excellent service. And that bar is very, very high. They provide their clients with excellent service. They are always evaluating us based on the service and the response. It's like, oh my gosh, I could never tell my client that, right? And when we make the mistake of giving them poor service that they could never take to their client, they are writing us off in a way. And this is where that solution mindset comes in. If you're coming into this with, you know, you're going to have to give them something, then you're really thinking like a service provider, not just a technician. Right? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That parallel is the language of the law firm, and you have to learn to speak it, and you have to learn to behave accordingly. Let's remember that lawyers will look at precedent for a solution. And if you ever go to a lawyer and say, you know, I don't really know how to solve this problem, but I don't know, I just thought we could throw up a whiteboard and come up with ideas, you're usually going to get a blank stare there, right? But if you come to them with, here are three options, what do you think? They'll tell you, well, the first one's the best one, and here's why, and the third one won't work, and here's why, right? Like, that, you've got to understand how to kind of click into the modality that they're comfortable with, that is consistent with the way that they do their day-to-day in six-minute increments.
Yeah, and I also think, and I want to hear what Robin thinks about this, I also think that there's a very easy mistake for our teams to make, and it's what you just described. Like, and I see this happen a lot. Well, I'm just going to ask the lawyer what they think we should do. I'm like, then what's your role as a service provider, right? Now you're just giving them, now you're just in that role of the graphic designers I don't like to work with. You're just going to give me exactly what you heard me ask for, nothing more. And that's a graphic designer that I don't work with for very long, right? And that's where the lawyer is going to be quick to write you up. They're looking at you like you're the business development professional. You're the marketing professional. You're the social media professional. You know, it's okay to say, I don't know, to a lawyer. And then you follow it up immediately. Let me talk to my team and come back to you with some ideas, right? Let me get a little bit more perspective. We don't have to have the answers right away. The lawyers don't expect us to have every answer right away, but they want to know. We're going to go think about it, and we're going to use all of the resources at our disposal, and then we're going to come back to them with something.
We're almost out of time here. So, Robin, I want to give you a chance to weigh in on this one before we wrap up.
Yeah, I can be brief, and it stems from something a woman partner at a law firm said years ago, but it stuck with me. You know, she was talking about it in the context of what she would say to a client because it was her advice for associates, but the same is true for us. She said, there's nothing wrong with telling your client, I need to think about that and get back to you.
Yes.
You're not telling them no in that moment. You're not telling them that you can't solve their problem in that moment. You're telling them that they have a complicated question for you, and you're going to go and do your job, do research if you need to do research, confer with others who may have encountered the situation, and you're going to come back to them with an answer. But because we live in this world where everyone is instantaneously reachable no matter where they are on the planet, a lot of people, especially earlier in their career, have this knee-jerk reaction of, I need to respond, I need to get back to this person, I need them to know that, like, you know, we're doing something. But that's not as effective as if you're making sure they understand that you're doing the right things.
That's so great, Robin. Say it one more time. What is the alternative to I don't know? You couched it so well, and I just want us to put a highlighter on it.
I need to think about that and get back to you.
I need to think about that and get back to you. And again, it points to this notion that work is still being done. Work has not stopped. Work is still being done. Some of it needs to be done offline, and then we'll come back online and continue, right? So it just helps the client, whoever that is in this scenario, feel like, okay, the thing that is important to me is being worked on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Well said.
I love it. I'm going to steal that line. Thank you.
You should.
Oh, because I said, I don't know. I said a minute ago, it's okay to say, I don't know. And then follow it with, but I'm going to work with my team. It's so elegant. So.
Well, you're not the only one, Matt. I'm sure many of those listening today will also be stealing, borrowing, repurposing a lot of these ideas. That's why we share them with you. Thank you both for sharing yours with us today. This was such a great dynamic duo interview. The two of you are like-minded and play off each other beautifully. So I really appreciate you sharing your time with us today. And we look forward to seeing you outside the bounds of this interview, either at the LMA conference coming up where you have your pre-con session or after that. Thanks again to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Today's episode was brought to you by Pipeline Plus. We solve business development problems for professionals around the world. Visit pipelineplus.com to learn more about our technology and coaching solutions.